This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, June 10th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, an interview with the author of a book on Barack Obama's rise to fame from obscurity. We'll also have a forecast from meteorologist Scott Olthoff. First, today's news. Supporters of a capital bill for Illinois say it's not too late for legislative leaders to salvage the plan, and now they're calling on residents statewide to get involved. The president of Southern Illinois University, Glenn Pichard, helped to build the collaborative $34 billion proposal. It failed to pass the Illinois House before the chamber adjourned last month, and Pichard says he was disappointed to hear the reasons for opposition during the debate.
None of this was done in private. None of it was done behind closed doors. We had leadership meetings every Thursday with all the leaders. We reported on progress. We gave updates. We asked for recommendations. This was as good as we could do.
But House Speaker Michael Madigan and several other members of his chamber weren't able to support it, either because they disagreed with the funding or because of what they call a trust issue with Governor Rod Blagojevich. Madigan spokesman Steve Brown says the capital legislation did include some protections for the individual projects, but it needed to go further.
What we need is line items in the appropriation bills that say here's exactly how the money is going to be spent, and then some post-release protections. So once the projects are approved, contracts are signed, that the administration doesn't pull back on funding with a threat so they can get something else accomplished.
The legislation has been tabled for now. There have been some talks of bringing it back to the fall veto session or during a special session this summer, but those who voted against it last month say without some modifications, their decisions won't change. Those who are waiting to see what action Illinois' governor will take with the recently passed state budget might have to wait a bit longer. Sean Crawford reports.
Governor Rod Blagojevich has options on what to do with a spending plan that he calls more than $2 billion out of balance, but he's unable to do anything with it until the measure reaches his desk. When that will happen is unclear. The House and Senate have 30 days from passing legislation to send it on to the governor, and the leaders of both chambers appear to be taking their time. A spokesperson for the House Speaker shed no light on how soon the governor could expect the budget to arrive, and some speculate the delay is a stall tactic, so the governor will be under more pressure once he gets the budget. If the legislature takes the entire amount of time allowed to send the budget to Blagojevich, he'd have only about a day to act before the new fiscal year begins. Blagojevich could veto the entire budget, reduce line item spending, or sign it. He's likely to face criticism no matter his course of action. I'm Sean Crawford.
Meanwhile, the governor is losing one of his top staffers as he struggles to push his agenda in Springfield. Deputy Governor Sheila Nix is leaving after less than 2 years on the job. Blagojevich has struggled with allegations of corruption and the shadow of a federal investigation. Roosevelt University political science professor Paul Green says Nix's departure raises some obvious questions.
I don't know the history behind it, but people start leaving in the second part of the second administration. I mean, that's just par for the course. But obviously, given all the publicity and all the activity with the legal problems, that may be connected to it. Then again, it may not be. I just don't know.
Nix says the current problems of the governor did not lead to her decision to leave. She says she wants to spend more time with her family. Just last week, the governor's close friend, fundraiser, and advisor Tony Rezko was convicted on corruption charges. Officials in Coles County have put off a decision whether to pursue state disaster declarations until it hears from residents. Emergency Management Coordinator Tom Watson says the request would stem from both the severe storms that hit the region on Friday as well as flood damage. He says the decision whether to submit the request hinges on the number of home and business owners who come forward that have storm and flood insurance.
It'll depend on the results of our damage assessment. You know, if we continue to see that most of the property is insured, then it's very likely that the state won't have any assistance to offer us.
On Friday, a tornado damaged about 70 properties in the Coles County village of Lerna, and straight-line winds brought down trees and damaged some businesses on the south side of Mattoon. Downed trees were cleared from roadways over the weekend, but crews were out yesterday with chainsaws to remove trees and other debris from walkways. Flooding has been less of a concern since Saturday when most roads were reopened in Coles County. Watson says he's not aware of many homes receiving damage in his county, but he's putting out the call for assessments to be sure. Further south, there are counties that are still concerned with flooding, including in Lawrence County, where a levee broke on the Wabash River this morning. Text messaging while driving would be illegal in Urbana under an ordinance that advanced out of committee at last night's city council meeting. AM 580's Jim Meadows has more.
Alderman Charlie Smythe hopes a ban in Urbana on texting while driving can lead to a statewide ban. But he had wanted the city ordinance to include a ban on all cell phone use behind the wheel. A state ban on texting while driving is one of the recommendations of a legislative task force due to release its final report in a few weeks. State Senator Mike Frericks of Champaign serves on the task force on distracted driving. He says a cell phone ban posed problems for some members.
I think there were some people who had concerns that some people use cell phones to report either terrorist activities, potential terrorist activities they see, or report accidents, and they didn't want to prohibit things like that. But texting, pretty much everyone agreed, requires more of your attention and is a greater distraction.
Frerich says he or another task force member could introduce a bill to ban text messaging while driving this coming November or January. Meanwhile, the Urbana ban will come up for a final city council vote next Monday. It also includes fines for drivers whose use of a cell phone or other mobile communications device contributes to an accident. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Even amid news of a faltering economy, the Champaign-Urbana area's hiring prospects appear to be stable. That's the assessment of a quarterly survey of employers. The survey from the temporary employment firm Manpower found 17% of firms expecting to do some hiring between July and September, while no one surveyed predicted layoffs. Those figures are slightly better than the same forecast in 2007, though slightly worse than the current quarter. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. 12 years ago, Barack Obama was a political unknown. Now he's poised to become the Democratic Party's nominee for president. Illinois Public Radio's Rich Egger spoke to the co-author of a book that examines Obama's rise from obscurity to fame.
When Obama first ran for the Illinois Senate in 1996, he knocked opponents off the ballot by challenging petition signatures. Author and Western Illinois University political scientist Keith Bockelman says this was an early indication that Obama knew how to play hardball politics.
I think it is. I mean, he's really run a campaign emphasizing idealism and, a new type of politics. But he's also, when called for, been able to participate, I guess, in the old type of politics. And so I do think it shows that he can be tough when he needs to be.
4 years later, Obama decided to run for Congress, and he lost that race to Bobby Rush. That was in 2000. What did he learn from that experience?
Well, I think one thing he learned was the importance of preparation. I think in retrospect, he felt like he had not been sufficiently prepared and had a well-developed strategy in running that race. I think maybe implicitly one thing he learned was how to deal with some of the racial issues in campaigns. That district is a predominantly African-American congressional district, which he, again, lost badly. He did win most of the white votes in the district, and so I think maybe he learned that he would have appeal as a crossover candidate, but I think mostly he learned the importance of being ready and being prepared. And I think one of the underreported stories of this campaign is how much his win in the Democratic primaries is really based on having a very well prepared, very well organized campaign, contesting the caucus states that Hillary Clinton didn't. That's really what put him over, I think, as much as anything.
The book also says that Obama followed the blueprint of other African-Americans who got elected to statewide office in Illinois. Can you explain that blueprint a little bit?
Well, I think for Carol Moseley Braun is probably the best example of this. There's some other failed examples with Roland Burris when he ran for Senate and governor. But the basic idea is to try to win a primary by gain the votes of African Americans and white liberals in a multi-candidate race. And Carroll Moseley Braun used it successfully. Roland Burris tried it. Didn't work as well for him, partly because he was not able to engender the same kind of turnout among African Americans. Obama used this also early in his Senate campaign. Later in his campaign, he sort of went beyond that. And I think that's why, in part, he ended up doing a lot better than Carroll Moseley Braun did. And he was able to get a majority in his Senate race, even in a multi-candidate race.
Yeah, have you seen him employing that same blueprint for the national campaign?
No, not as much, partly because the dynamics are different. You know, in a national campaign, you have to win these states with predominantly white voters like Iowa and New Hampshire. So his strategy has been different. He's really, as we know, emphasized more trying to turn out young people and getting them activated in caucus states in particular. So it's been a slightly different strategy.
There's a lot of talk, I guess, that Obama does not have much experience dealing with foreign policy. How do you see his campaign during the coming months trying to prove that he can handle foreign affairs?
Well, I think he's already lined up a series of, you know, ex-generals and people like that trying to give him credibility and getting endorsements for people. He's made a lot of speeches on foreign policy. I think one area which maybe hasn't gotten as much attention as foreign policy, but they may become a concern for him, is the economy. That's obviously going to be a big issue in this race. People have commented that McCain doesn't have a lot of expertise on economic matters. But in all honesty, Obama has not really emphasized that either in his career to date. That's not an issue he emphasizes as a state senator all that much. And so his economic policies may become more of an issue, I think, as the campaign progresses.
Well, what is his economic policy?
Well, you know, he has some small bore policies, changing the tax code in various ways to encourage, you know, small business and to do some things to make college more affordable. And these are, I don't think there's anything wrong with any of these policies, but in terms of a big picture economic policy, I guess I have not seen as much of that. He's been kind of all over the place on trade policy, which I think is something that's kind of a sleeper issue as well. He's been almost like John Kerry, I guess, for free trade until he was against it. So I think he's going to have to establish exactly where he is on issues like, on the bigger picture questions like that.
Keith Bockelman teaches political science at Western Illinois University. He's co-author of the book Barack Obama, The New Face of American Politics. Rich Egger reporting.
Rain has moved away from most of the two-state area for the next couple of days, at least according to our meteorologist Scott Olthoff. The forecast for the two-state area: in Illinois, partly to mostly sunny and less humid. In Indiana, scattered morning showers giving way to partly to mostly sunny skies by this afternoon. Highs today will range from 80 in the north to 86 in the south. In Champaign-Urbana, a sunny high of 82 degrees. For tonight, partly cloudy across the two states. Lows from 59 north to 65 south, 63 in Champaign-Urbana. And for tomorrow, sunny and pleasant again. Highs from 82 north to 87 in the south. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, June 10th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, Agricultural Programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.